Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. During the COVID pandemic, demand for single-use plastics has increased by a whopping 40%. So which companies are the biggest plastic polluters? Well, thanks to Break Free from Plastic members and allies, we now have a list. The top global polluters of the year are Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Nestle, Unilever, Mars, Procter & Gamble, Philip Morris, and Colgate-Palmolive. This year, almost 15,000 break-from-free plastic volunteers in 55 countries collected over 346,000 pieces of plastic waste and cataloged the brand names. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and Nestle have remained the top three global polluters every year since the group started conducting its data and its studies in 2018. The group predicts that single-use plastics could double by 2030 and possibly triple by 2050. As we know, plastic pollution is already having a devastating impact on human health, animals, and the planet. So on today's Your Call, we are continuing our discussions about the changes that are needed to tackle this crisis and hold companies and manufacturers accountable. Joining us is Marcus Erickson, an environmental scientist and co-founder of the Five Gyres Institute. They empower action against the global plastic pollution crisis. Marcus Erickson recently co-founded Leap Lab, a network of science centers committing to building self-reliant communities. Marcus is the author of two books, My River Home and Junk Raft, An Oceanic Voyage and the Rising Tide of Activism to Fight Plastic Pollution. Hi, Marcus. Welcome back to the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. I want to start by beginning where we usually end the show, and that is, what will it take to hold these companies accountable? We've done so many shows, Marcus. You've been on the show before. And I feel like we just keep repeating the same thing, but the numbers get bigger. But now that we have the names of these companies, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Nestle, Mars, Colgate, Palmolive, what will it take to hold them accountable? And what would that look like?
That's a really good question. We've asked that question of ourselves for decades. What does it take to really turn the tide? And I think where we are approaching, I'd like to think we're approaching a tipping point. And it has to do with, you know, what my friends and colleagues often say is it's constant pressure over time. We're seeing lots of legislative bills around the world, both locally and now with international treaties being discussed. But then also you're seeing, I think with some companies, the mindset is shifting away from, the common practices that are exploitive and extractive, and moving away from those so things are more sustainable. As the public is much more aware and policymakers are scrutinizing their activities, we're seeing some produced responsibility, not just the legislative bills, but also the voluntary acts of businesses come forward.
We know that this is a billion-dollar industry. I mean, these are billion-dollar corporations that we're talking about. And we've had Sharon Lerner on the show many times. She's an amazing reporter for The Intercept. She ran a piece back in July called Waste Only, How the Plastics Industry is Fighting to Keep Polluting the World. And she had all of these incredible examples about how it was really the plastics industry and the oil industry, like Exxon, Chevron, DuPont, who really pushed this whole idea of recycling to basically make people feel good buying all this stuff and then throwing it in the recycling bin and thinking yes, that would be recycled. But really, when you look at what's going on in the United States, that's just not happening at the scale that it needs to.
It is not happening. You know, that is the big myth. You know, I remember when I was a kid, I grew up in Louisiana back in the late 70s, early 80s. There was an incinerator a few blocks from my house. And so that's where much of our trash went. But also, I remember some of those initial campaigns, the Crying Indian campaign was one that we often saw on the big screen. That was a Native American actor that shed a tear as plastic trash went across a roadside. Or there was one image of him in a canoe and plastic trash floating. And the tagline is very clearly said, people cause pollution. And that was an attempt, you know, after the rise in environmental consciousness in the 60s and 70s, is response by industry to say, okay, The writing's on the wall. Let's divert the responsibility to the public. So you began to see this awareness raising around people being responsible. At the same time, industry was, through policy mechanisms, undercutting many of the things that were working, like bottle bills, for example. And they upended those and then pushed this recycling myth on the public, that you, the public, the plastic problem is your problem because you're not recycling. But the reality is, we have seen recycling systems just fail left and right around the country, around the world. Even here in the U.S., less than 10%, I think in the late 90s, 9.2% of plastics made in the United States actually found their way back into recycle centers. It's been a dismal failure.
You know, I have to say, because you mentioned that ad of the so-called Native American, I see it right now. I just pulled it up and it says, "Get involved now. Pollution hurts all of us." And this was a guy, Iron Eyes Cody, but he actually was not Native American. He was Italian.
He was an Italian actor.
Right. Yes. He played Indians in his life and on screen. I mean, a lot of people remember that ad. And, you know, it's still getting attention because he actually was not Native. Elaborate on what you just said, the other thing that Sharon has done such an incredible job of really exposing is that, you know, even when you have local governments passing these plastic bag bans, the industry comes in and writes a bill that would override the ban at the state level, thanks to Republican legislatures, mostly Republican legislatures across the country. So, I mean, they're just doing whatever they can to continue business as usual.
As much as they can, yes. And one great example, I remember back in 2009, I was working with some colleagues in Seattle, and one good individual there, Heather Trim, she was pushing with her colleagues a plastic bag ban in Seattle back in 2009. And they had raised, I think, $60,000 over 10 months to really push this campaign. And the public was really behind it. In the last 3 weeks, industry came in, the trade group, the American Chemistry Council, and spent, I think it was $1.4 million in bus ads and billboards and commercials to say, this plastic bag ban is going to raise taxes, kill jobs. Hmm. Just those two phrases alone shifted public attention away to reject the bag ban. It, of course, passed a couple of years later. But yes, that tactic has been strong, and it's still employed today. You can see it happening around the country.
When you look at the cheap price of oil in many cases, can you talk about why you think these corporations want to continue business as usual? I mean, there are some really great small companies, organic companies, for example, that are trying to use biodegradable packaging for their goods, for example. They're trying really hard at some level, but the big ones, it seems, are not. And is it because oil is so cheap? Is that why they keep building these plastics manufacturing plants?
Well, I think that there's a lot to unpack there. You know, on biodegradable materials, we can talk about that. And there's a lot of innovation happening in that space and a lot of greenwashing to have to deal with. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I would say that the big oil companies are pushing plastics so hard is because it's a big chunk of their business and it's growing. As we see the demand for fossil fuels declining worldwide, we're seeing an uptick in a demand for plastics. Now, part of that demand is coupled with, I mean, there is a rising population and there is a growing middle class. We're seeing, you know, China, India, Brazil, and Russia, as their middle class rises, the demand for plastics is much, much greater. So the demand is there. The population growth is there. And the decline in fossil fuels for fuel is declining. Therefore, they're shifting out to plastics. So part of the Break Free from Plastic Act is to create a moratorium on those plants. The rising trend right now around the world is to build more plastic plants, and we're trying to upend that. Shall we talk about bioplastics a bit? Because that's a whole other solution I see. It's very viable.
Please, go ahead.
You know, if you look at conventional bioplastics, what many of us look at when we think of bioplastics, you might see that one cup at an eco event that might say it's made from corn, has a green leaf on it, and it says compostable. And that's kind of been what we've learned the last, you know, decade and a half, is this product PLA, polylactic acid, corn-based plastics are a viable alternative. And in some cases they are, they get us off of fossil fuels to some degree, but there's been a lot of greenwashing about the, what does that term mean, compostability? And most of the public thinks compostable means biodegradable. If it's lost in the ocean or the roadside, it's gonna go away. We did an experiment 3 years ago, a very informal little study. I took 20 bioplastic products and I put them into a milk crate and I sunk them under a fishing dock for 2 years. And the experiment was to show what happens if they get lost to the ocean. I took the same set of 20 and we put those in my backyard here in sunny California for 2 years under about 1 inch of soil. And after 2 years, nothing happened. Whatsoever. So biodegradability of PLA, in a sense of the way the public understands it, is not happening. It's not true. But in that study, I had one product called PHA, polyhydroxyl alkanoate. PHA is made from, you can make it from methane, you feed to bacteria, they make PHA, and you pull the PHA out of these microbes. That can form a kind of plastic-like material. And the thickest item in my little study was a beach toy, a very thick beach toy. And in 2 years in the ocean, it was gone. So we are doing a study right now on PHA. We're looking to start in 2021. We've got about a dozen different PHA products. And it looks like a promising alternative to some of the thin film packaging applications where plastic is used. These bioplastics are not going to replace the single-use throwaway habit with another single-use throwaway material. But it does have a possibility for some thin film applications.
As someone who wants to do the right thing, if you do see that a company is using, quote, compostable packaging or some other kind of packaging, how can you find information about whether or not that is true?
That's the challenge, because there's if you read the fine print, I mean, those products, they will say compostable. And what compostable means is, first of all, your city has to have a system for sorting that PLA, that compostable bioplastic, out of the waste stream, sort it, and then have the facility where they can then grind it to increase the surface area on the particles, and then put it into a composting environment. And I can tell you more and more, well, first of all, most cities don't sort that way. It's expensive to add another layer of sorting. And then many composting facilities, they don't want these bioplastics, the compostable ones. For example, in Oregon, the compostable companies throughout the state put out one letter they all signed and said, we don't want compostables in our industrial composting facility anymore because they just don't break down at the speed we need them to. So to get more information, you got to do some personal sleuthing. So seeing that confusion around what is this bioplastic material? That's why it's prompted us to do these studies, looking at PHA as a possible alternative if it works. And our study is going to take PHA packaging, and there are a bunch of companies now already making forks and straws and bags and so forth. We're going to put them in 6 environments: cold aquatic environments in Maine and Florida, and in California, and terrestrial environments, and see how does this stuff behave. There is such a need for a third-party sort of validation, ground-truthing of these claims, because once the greenwashing happens, it really undermines the confidence from other manufacturers who might want to use the product, and the consumers as well.
Today, we are continuing our discussions about plastic pollution and what to do about it with Marcus Erickson, an environmental scientist, co-founder of the 5 Gyres Institute, and author of Junk Raft, An Oceanic Voyage and the Rising Tide of Activism to Fight Plastic Pollution. If you have any questions or comments for Marcus, we'd love to hear from you. Whenever we do shows about this, we get a huge response because so many people care about this issue. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Marcus, can you talk about the importance of naming names? When I was reading this report from Break Free from Plastic this morning, I was thinking about how, you know, when we say plastic pollution, okay, well, that can mean a lot of different things. And I think the same thing relies on factory farms. You got to go deeper and really name the names. And so plastic pollution, now we have the names, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Nestle. And then when it comes to the oil companies that are producing this stuff, it's Exxon, Chevron, DuPont. What are your thoughts about the importance of actually naming names?
You know, I think you do have to name the names. You've got to call out to the biggest polluters. It's worked in the past. If you think of other issues that we have solved, things like the hole in the ozone layer or smog over cities where we had emissions controls, or like it's the hole in the ozone layer, we banned CFCs. We were naming companies, but also we had a very focused campaigns that were focused on upstream solutions, on eliminating CFCs, on putting emissions controls. So that's what this issue is going to take, this plastics issue. And you got to call out the biggest polluters in the process. Now, what makes plastic pollution different from the ones I just mentioned, from the hole in the ozone layer and smog over cities, is that plastic pollution, it's much more complicated. If you think of, if you use that blanket term, plastic pollution, are you talking about textiles like polyester? Are you talking about fishing gear or tires, single-use plastics, durable goods, e-waste? Like what is the focus? And once you figure that, the reason why it's important is because these are all very different kinds of polymers that are used. The chemistry is different, the inputs to the environment, the harm on the planet, but also the social and economic harm are all very different. So what you mentioned, you know, the oil companies and then some of the brands, that's focusing on the one sector, primarily on the single-use throwaway plastics. We've got, you know, the companies, like you said, Coke and Pepsi and Mars, Unilever, Mondelez. These are some of the biggest polluters, and the Breakthrough from Plastic brand audit, like you mentioned, 346,000 pieces of plastic were picked up. 63% of those had brands on them. And that's very important because people pay attention. We're seeing more and more people really paying attention to packaging and who's making that packaging. I just went to a website yesterday, the Packaging Digest, and they recognize three norms that are changing in how the public views packaging. And the pandemic is sort of shifting these. One is a change in buying patterns. People are going online for their stuff. We all know that. But people are looking at that they want less glam and they want more bubble wrap. They want things to be protected. They want things packaged for sustainability. Consumers are favoring less plastic and more non-plastic packaging. We all know just recently that Amazon is listening to the public that's coming down on them for their excess packaging and throwaway packaging. Also, consumers want a longer shelf life, which might mean a little more packaging for food delivery. So we're seeing the public is paying attention. And that's where brands, you know, for years, I've been in this issue for almost 20 years. Hmm. And we have been calling out brands for many decades before I came to the scene and since then. And that's really accelerated as we realize the public wants to know who the biggest polluters are. So as we get the brands involved, their ESG goals often are addressing what the public wants to see. And the public is demanding today much less plastic than they were 5 years ago.
What do you think will happen post-COVID? I mean, I guess it's really hard to predict this, but NPR had a piece this morning about how massive online shopping is creating shipping log jams. So these companies are saying that if you want this package by Christmas, it might not happen. I mean, we're talking millions, billions of packages being sent across mm-hmm. the country. I feel for these UPS people and postal service workers because they just have to deliver so much in one day. And then when you think about all the plastic that's in that box, it really, really adds up.
I don't think a shift back to, you know, people rushing to stores to buy things is going to be anywhere near what it was, you know, pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. I think people are used to and comfortable with getting things shipped at home. You know, again, people want less glam, more bubble wrap. They want the products to be safe, healthy, and clean. I mean, the CDC recently said that COVID can live on a box, cardboard board, for up to 24 hours. They want cleaner facilities, cleaner transport. They want things packaged for sustainability, less plastic, non-plastic, longer shelf life. So I think all these things together are telling us that the consumers are going to want what they want delivered to their homes. They want less plastic, But a lot of it, they're not going to be able to be without plastic because of the long shelf life that they are demanding.
Right. Given that you have done this for 20 years, can you just tell us what really is happening around the globe now that consumption is really exploding and you've got a lot more middle class families, with globalization, you have a lot of these U.S. multinationals now doing business all around the world. It's hard to even really imagine when you think about all the stuff that is sold. What changes have you seen and what concerns you the most?
Well, you know, I sort of wax and wane from optimism to pessimism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this last year has been painful for a lot of people for all kinds of reasons we already know about. But one thing I'm seeing coming out of this year is a lot of conversation about a global strategy on plastics, on plastic waste. And like you just mentioned, there is this uptick globally, a rising middle class and demand for goods, for materials, not just plastics and metals and glass, cardboard. The amount of stuff that's being produced and the waste estimates around the world are skyrocketing. But this international treaty, for example, just about a little more than a month ago, we had the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, World Wildlife Fund, and 30 brands out a document calling for a global UN treaty on plastic pollution. And just prior to that, two groups, Gaia and CL, put out that preceded this one document, their own version of a global strategy. And just about 2 months ago, the Council of I think it's Nordic Ministers, they put out another global strategy. So I think 2021 is going to be a conversation about what does it look like a global strategy to minimize the impacts of plastics, not the environment, but also the social impacts and the economic impacts of the plastic waste. A lot of it has to do with sort of harmonizing strategies. Things are they're very different from country to country, city to city. So harmonizing that, increasing the ability of nations and cities to manage waste, but at the same time, getting rid of those materials, those products, those kinds of packaging that we know are the biggest polluters. And, you know, as an environmental researcher, I want to share with you one paper we just published that's very important for a couple of reasons. The paper identified plastic bags, large masses of plastic bags in the stomachs of camels. Mm. And this study that we just published 2 weeks ago, I was the lead author on this. I had a chance to go to Dubai, Kuwait, Oman, and Qatar. And I was there studying plastics in the Gulf of Arabia. And I met a veterinarian in Dubai, and he said, "Follow me to the desert." So we spent a few hours, went deep in the desert, and we found these accumulations of bones from camels inside each of them, in the rib cage. We were pulling out these masses of plastic bags the size of a medium to a large suitcase. I have one, it's in my garage here in Los Angeles. It weighs about almost 80 pounds. Mm. And I cut it in half, and it's dense with plastic bags. Now, this study was important for a couple of reasons. First, it takes the attention, the issue, away from being just an ocean issue. Plastics are impacting ecosystems worldwide. But it also, this study showed that the five masses I pulled out of five camels, that brings a total, according to this one veterinarian I spoke with, up to 300 camels of a population of 30,000 in and around Dubai. That's a 1% mortality rate. Mm. It's a population level impact. So now we're seeing it's a global issue. It's impacting animals at a population level. And it's a single-use plastic item, the bag. It's the poster child for the single-use plastic for a problem. And it's an item that we don't need. We are seeing so much innovation coming in to replace the bags or replace the delivery systems for getting goods from the grocery store to your car, from a store to your home. So we're seeing that the solutions are there. But as you mentioned before, some of these bigger corporations, the bigger polluters, to some degree, their business models are banking on the way things have been for decades. So they're fighting these policies tooth and nail.
We were looking at the photos of these camels this morning, Marcus, and it's just devastating. I mean, here are these two beautiful camels, and they're just surrounded by plastic. The study suggests that plastic kills 1% of camels in the United Arab Emirates. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'd love to ask you more about this study. As you say, from the camel's perspective, if it's not sand, it is food. And you can read about this study and see these photos at yourcallradio.org. Marcus Erickson is an environmental scientist and co-founder of the Five Gyres Institute. They empower action against the global plastic pollution crisis. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. I just got some breaking news from CBS that the poverty rate in the country saw its biggest increase in 60 years this year. 8 million people, 8 million more people are just having a really hard time making ends meet. And so on tomorrow's show, we are going to talk about the latest on the relief bill in Washington. We'll bring you the latest news on that. Today, we are talking about plastic pollution. We've done so many shows about this, where we are right now, what it will take to hold corporations accountable, what it will take to get governments around the world to pass legislation that will actually make a difference on this issue. We're joined by Marcus Erickson, an environmental scientist and co-founder of the Five Gyres Institute. He's also author of Junk Raft, An Oceanic Voyage and the Rising Tide of Activism to Fight Plastic Pollution. If you have any questions or comments about plastic pollution, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Marcus, if we could spend a little more time talking about the study that you conducted and just the experience you had in the United Arab Emirates, learning about what's happening to camels. In this piece, Science News, it says, with a stomach full of plastic, camels do not eat because they don't feel hungry, and then they starve to death. Plastic can also leach toxins and introduce bacteria that poison the camels.
Yeah, it's pretty devastating. You know, if you think, if you try to put yourself in the mind of an animal that's out there, you know, scavenging for food. And as we said earlier, if it's not sand, it's food to a camel. That's all they've known for many thousands or millions of years. Mm-hmm. So this new material is introduced to the environment, these plastic bags. And I saw them just stuck in these acacia trees. They're stuck on fences. When I drove through Kuwait, there was one long fence. It went for miles and miles, and the fence was leaning at a 45-degree angle, just covered in plastic bags completely on one side, and the wind had pushed it over. So these camels are eating this trash. And if you think of, imagine if you had maybe a dozen plastic bags in your stomach, all wadded into a knot, maybe a few bottle caps and a couple straws in your stomach, and you carry that 1 or 2 pound mass of trash in your gut for months or years. And some of the impacts from that, it might cause lacerations, as we found in camels. I mean, it's tearing the inside lining of their throat and their stomach. It would cause blockages. Your body might try to pass it and it might cause a blockage, and then you suffer and die very quickly. Or it creates a very septic environment where the folds of the plastics are harboring bacteria and the animals get sick. So what Uli Werner is the scientist, the veterinarian who I met in Dubai, who's been doing amazing work on conservation, not just on camels, on raptors and oryx and lots of animals. He deeply empathizes with the animals. And he told me this, and it really struck like an emotional chord that, wow, we don't have to cause this suffering to the planet, to people and other living things on this planet. The plastic bag, it's the escape artist. I mean, the best waste management systems on the planet. You can put fences around landfills. You can put, a door over a garbage can, or put a tarp over trucks. These plastic bags, they escape. They blow out of those environments. They blow across the desert. They blow across oceans, across beaches. We've all seen them. And they cause these devastating impacts. And the horrible thing is that we don't need them. We don't need these bags. And then you've got industry fighting bag bans around the world. So I'm hoping that this study is just another nail in the coffin to get rid of single-use plastics. And we're seeing that happen around the world as legislators are looking at single-use plastics bans. The EU, for example, has banned single-use plastics. There are hundreds of countries around the world looking at plastic bag bans, other single-use plastic bans, and the Break Free from Plastic Act. The Break Free from Plastic has done a lot of amazing, amazing work. And one of the most amazing things I've seen here in the United States specifically is the Break Free from Plastic Act, which is still on the table and can really be a big game changer in a positive way for the United States.
Well, to your point, so Canada announced that they're going to ban single-use plastics as early as next year. And a number of organizations, as you said, they are now urging President-elect Biden to take 8 executive actions to solve this crisis, or at least to take real action to do something to solve it. Some demands include making corporate polluters pay to stop subsidizing plastic products and then to encourage the use of reusables. What are your thoughts based on the people that Biden is picking and what action you'd like them to take?
I think the Break Free from Plastic, the coalition of over 2,000 organizations, our organization, the Plastic Pollution Coalition, there are so many organizations around the world. We would all love to see the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act pass. And all the provisions in the act, they make perfect sense. One is to require producers of packaging containers and food service products to design, manage, and finance waste and recycle programs. The polluter should pay. So that's a producer responsibility aspect of this. We need more of that. We need to create a national bottled beverage program. We have had, when I was a kid, I used to collect bottles and turn them in for a nickel a bottle. That's how I could buy candy bars when I was 10 years old. I remember this very clearly. Many of those have been upended across the country. Here in the United States, we have 10 states that still have very active and extremely effective bottle bills. So part of the Break Free from Plastic Act is to extend those nationwide, a national program for beverage container refunds. Another is to just eliminate single-use plastics. Like the way Canada is doing it, the EU has done it, we need to do it. They are the biggest polluters. If you look at the total cost, the life cycle of single-use plastics, from extraction to pollution and all the impacts on people, the social impacts, economic impacts, ecological impacts, all of that cost for a very short-term benefit of use, it doesn't make sense. I think the world has woken up to that. So another aspect of the Breakthrough from Plastic Bill is to support huge investment in domestic infrastructure on composting and improve some recycling, but not to really focus on recycling as we were being told to do back in the 70s and 80s. To really make recycling a lower tier goal after we're reducing through the bans and reusing. So some of those reuse economies, we are seeing, one thing that makes me very optimistic is that we are seeing so much innovation, ways to deliver goods. There's one company I saw called Repack. They have a reusable mailer that, FedEx, UPS, and Amazon could use. There's one company, Vessel, has a reusable cup that can be used across a city in multiple restaurants and coffee shops. So the innovative systems for moving goods without the legacy of plastic waste are happening. We just need the Break Free from Plastic Act to level the playing field and have the polluters step in and do their share.
Well, if you'd like to sign on to that act and share it with others to raise awareness, we have a link on our website, yourcallradio.org. Today, we are speaking with Marcus Erickson, an environmental scientist, co-founder of the Five Gyres Institute. And he just said, make the polluters pay. And we have a couple of callers with related comments. So let's hear from Thomas in San Francisco. Hi, Thomas. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Hey, hello. Good morning. I am regrettably and depressingly one of those polluters, and I'm utterly depressed about it. I'm a small artisanal coffee company, and we have really racked ourselves over what to do with our packaging. We don't want to be one of those greenwashers because we know that's just, we don't want to be one of those, but it is about perishability on the shelf. We're in a couple hundred stores, and we're just, we supported Assembly Bill 1080 in the California state legislature, which failed. We get our packaging from Tricorn Braun up in Portland, and we've written them and pleaded with them to come up with better packaging. So I just want to say I'm just completely supportive of everything your guest is saying, and just know that the small-time artisanal folks like me, I mean, we are racking our heads, and I feel like it has to be some draconian measure that's just going to demand the larger systems.
So Thomas, can I ask you, if I'm hearing you right, you're trying to find packaging that doesn't pollute the planet, but you're having a hard time with it. Is that right? It's just not out there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and your guest, I do appreciate the repack idea, but for kind of smaller producers like us, it's really hard. I mean, I've honestly thought about closing the business because I feel like I am the polluter. Wow. It's really depressing to me. And I agree with everything your guest is saying. And I, you know, if he wants to challenge me, and I'd give him my number and he can come and look at our business, and really, we have drilled down, jumped down the rabbit hole on packaging, and we can't find a solution yet. And I know it's out there on the horizon, but in the meantime, I just feel terrible about what we're doing.
Well, thank you so much, Thomas, for calling in. Marcus, what are your thoughts, and do you have any tips for Thomas?
Well, you know, I love what Thomas had to say, because it points out a few things. That one is that you've got a lot of people, young business owners, that want to do the right thing, that they have the values that we share, that we don't want to cause harm, but with our business, but we have to stay in business. So what does that transition look like? So as we emerge from a very wasteful society, this throwaway habit, to one that's focused on reusables and doing less harm and no legacy of waste with our business operations, this is the space where I kind of see the plastic pollution movement is migrating to. I've been doing science for about a decade now, from ocean exploration and now looking at biomaterials. And what Thomas is saying, this is where the rubber meets the road. What's that transition look like? And what we're seeing is emerging companies that are looking at how do you package or deliver goods to the customer without a lot of waste. So in the case of Thomas, his company, the one I mentioned before, Vessel, that's one example of a reusable economy that's focused on the local sort of citywide effort, where you can have one cup, you get it from one restaurant, one coffee shop, you drink it in your car, it's reusable, a steel cup, and you bring the exact same cup, give it to the next restaurant and say, okay, I'm going to come to you now to buy your product, but here's the same cup I got over there. And they take it. They take it, they wash it, and they reuse it again. So these reuse economies, there are models working across the country. And then I have seen some other companies that are producing, like, for example, one company called Recup that has a proprietary film. It's a very thin film they put on the surface of paper that can hold hot beverages. It is a single-use throwaway item, but it fits with some of the recycling infrastructure. So we're seeing lots of innovative businesses that are trying to pull us away from the single-use plastic throwaway culture, where the extraction of the fossil fuels to make plastics has its own kinds of harm. And then the back end, the impact of trash, that plastic trash, has harm. So you're seeing companies pulling away from that and showing companies like Thomas's what some possibilities are. And, you know, we don't have all the answers just yet. There is a need for companies to sort of to take the leap and try out some of these innovations, these reusable economies that are local, or some of these new biomaterials. So we're in that transition phase right now. So I really appreciate Thomas's call, and I'd be happy to chat offline. I love these kinds of conversations.
Yeah, well, thank you, Thomas. And if you would like to chat with Marcus, you can find his info at yourcallradio.org, or you can drop us an email, yourcall@kalw.org, and we will continue doing these shows. I hope you can continue tuning in. Let's go next to John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose.
Hi, John. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. This is a great subject that a lot of us can identify with. But I am guilty of, you know, overusing plastic items. And after hearing today's program, I've actually finished putting a post on my Facebook about encouraging people to stop buying from these companies. You know, I guess what you call a boycott. You know, refusing to do that. I mean, my question is that going to help? Like,
yes.
Refusing to buy from Coke, Pepsi, and Nestle? Will that help?
Marcus?
I would say yes, yes, and yes. I mean, we're seeing thriving local economies. And you know, this alludes to a much bigger picture. I think we're seeing the deglobalization of stuff and the globalization of ideas. And we're seeing lots of local economies that are beginning to thrive. So I think if you wanted to pull away from some of the bigger corporations who are pawning materials and products on us and look to see who locally is providing the same service. Because that same service locally, the carbon footprint, transportation is much less. The packaging can be a whole lot less. The reuse economy is there. It's growing locally. And you're supporting a local person, a local company. So you have the option or the likelihood of some reciprocal altruism in your community while you serve the growth of your community. So I think it does help. It's very important what Break Free from Plastic has done with the brand audit. They're doing it every year. It is so essential to call the polluters because, like we said before, these polluters, they're paying attention. Their ESG goals are wrapped around what the public perceives of their behavior, what their values are. So no longer are we seeing much less greenwashing happening because there are groups like Break Free who are calling them out on it.
Right. And again, you can find that Break Free report at yourcallradio.org. The top polluters are Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Nestle, Unilever. They own all. And the thing is, you got to go to these websites to look at all the corporations and the companies that they own. Mars, Procter & Gamble, Philip Morris, and Colgate, Palmolive. So thank you again for that call. Let's go next to Mark in San Francisco. Hi, Mark.
Hi, good morning. I'm just wondering, I wonder if banning single-use plastic and having only multi-use plastic just kind of pushes the problem down the road because that plastic will end up in the environment at some point.
That's a very good question. That's a very, very good question because you'll often think, you know, if you look at what we call life cycle assessments, and this is taking in the true cost of from extraction to manufacture, transport, and then collection, and then either it's being reused or recycled, likely going to the incinerator or the dump, or lost to the environment. So that true cost of the full footprint, the carbon footprint of those of that plastic for a single-use plastic, which is used one time, versus a much thicker item, maybe used a dozen times, we debate those. But what we've seen time and time again, when you look at the life cycle assessments of reusables, like I have some colleagues, Andy Keller at Chico Bag, he began, I mean, many, many years ago when this issue first began to take hold in the public's consciousness back in the early 2000s, he made a bag. It's made of a really tough nylon, and you can use that bag hundreds, if not thousands of times compared to what the true cost of hundreds of thousands of single-use plastic bags might be. So what we see over and over again is that the thicker reusable items, the carbon footprint is so much lower than the single-use throwaways. So while there is an impact if you're using a thicker reusable item, it's much, much less, therefore much more desirable to go to reusable items. Hmm.
Well, thank you for that call. We're almost out of time. We have to have you back to continue this. And I just wonder, final thoughts on where we are. Because when you see some of the new data that's coming out, for example, Amazon has boosted the amount of plastic packaging they're using over the last 3 years. They've produced enough plastic waste just last year to circle the globe 500 times. You can't even comprehend that. And then you have so much awareness raising going on and companies owned by, you know, our last caller, I believe it was Thomas, who's trying to do the right thing. And a lot of people like Thomas. So we move forward and then you hear about a company like Amazon. What are your thoughts about what's next now that there is this issue is getting so much more attention?
You know, when our call started, I mentioned this one phrase, constant pressure over time. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing the science is being done. There are published papers coming out almost every day. We had two this year, one on camels. Another one earlier this year was on plastic in polar regions, where we include a photograph of a Snickers bar wrapper frozen to an iceberg. So this, the science that's done, it raises the public consciousness. It continues to make us understand where the focus should be. And now we're seeing global attention. You know, I mentioned earlier the international treaty that's been proposed by 30 brands, World Wildlife Fund, and Ellen MacArthur Foundation. And then with Gaia and CL, their call for a global strategy, that's all happening next year. In February of 2022, UNEA 5, they will debate what that global treaty might look like. So while we're seeing, you know, some of the big polluters, and Amazon definitely is a big polluter in their packaging, we're seeing international attention. It's skyrocketing. And we're seeing lots of action at the legislative front. We need that policy. We need those that legislation. It levels the playing field, which allows for the innovators to come up, to people like Thomas and his business, to find a solution that works locally and put it out there to show how it's scalable to other countries and cities around the globe. So while this has been a year full of pessimism, I personally am emerging on this issue with optimism. The work of Break Free from Plastic and the annual audits that they do, the Break Free from Plastic Act, the international treaty, I think we're going to see in 2021, we're going to see us moving into a space where the scientists, the policymakers, and many of the brands now are on board, are going to think of what can we do for this once and all.
Well, Marcus, as always, thank you for your work. Thank you for joining us, and we'd love to have you back in the new year.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Marcus Erickson is an environmental scientist and co-founder of the Five Gyres Institute. They do great work to raise awareness about these issues. You can also check out his book, Junk Raft, An Oceanic Voyage and the Rising Tide of Activism to Fight Plastic Pollution. Links to everything we talked about today are at yourcallradio.org. Be sure to check out the report that names names and share it with as many people as possible. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.